Hi, I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Woodham in the West.
And this is VoiceOver
Body Shop.
Or VO.
BS.
There you go. All right, we got a great show tonight. I'm not actually there. I'm actually in Buffalo tonight. And our guest tonight is Richard Dorton, who is the top mocap man in Hollywood. What's mocap? We'll find out all about it and why, as a voice actor, you might find it interesting. And we've got the Vox VOBS News, and you've got some technical stuff, right?
I've always got tech stuff to talk about, so stay tuned.
All right, we'll be right back.
Two men, twin sons from different mothers, with a passion for voiceover recording technology and the desire to make recording easy for voice actors everywhere, together in one place. George Whittam, the home studio engineer to the stars, a Virginia Tech grad with an unmatched knowledge of all the latest gear and technology in voiceover today. Dan Leonard, the home studio master, a voice actor with over 30 years experience in broadcasting and recording, and a no-holds-barred, myth-busting attitude for teaching you how easy it is. Together, finally, to bring you all the latest technology, the superstars of voiceover today, and leading the discussion on how to make the most of your voiceover business. This is VoiceOver Body Shop. And now, live from their super-secret multimedia studio in Sherman Oaks, California, here are George Whittam and Dan Leonard.
Hi, I'm Dan Leonard.
And I'm George Whittam.
And this is VoiceOver
Body Shop.
Or VO.
BS.
There you go. All right. Well, here I am back in the old hometown of Buffalo for a week. It's kind of weird being back here. Kind of surreal, but I'm a Californian now, and it's kind of sticky here.
Well, it's fun to have you remote. This is the first time we've ever had you far away and me in the studio. So we're going to see how it goes. But with Andrew at the switches tonight, it's going to go really well. I'm looking forward to having you.
Yeah, and I know we have a live studio audience tonight.
We do. We absolutely
do. Shout out to them, Andrew.
Andrew's got a shot. Yeah, there they are.
All right. Woo. There's Jay and Tim and some lovely lady.
Right on. So, yeah, we got a few people here because Richard brings his fan club with him. Actually, they're not just fan club. These guys are students and people that have worked with them, so they can all speak from experience about what it's like to learn mocap.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about mocap and why it's relevant to you if you're a voice actor. So so stay tuned for that in a little bit. But right now...
Now, the VoiceOver Extra, VOBS News. The latest and most comprehensive voiceover industry news. Brought to you live.
All righty, here is the Vox VOBS News for August 22nd, TED Talk. Okay, everybody raise your hand if you narrate audiobooks. Okay, keep your hand up if you narrate mostly nonfiction audiobooks. All right, and keep that hand up if your narration sound deadly boring. Ooh, that was a pretty big breeze as all your hands dropped. Or at least some of you are being honest. All right. Here's what everyone should keep in mind. Narrating nonfiction does not mean non-acting. In fact, many will argue that making nonfiction audiobooks consistently interesting is more challenging than narrating a fiction story. Now, if you still don't mind playing along, raise your hand if you viewed a TED Talk online, or at least heard about them. I know I have. They're actually, Marcy actually listens to those at night when she can't sleep. Whatever. Anyway, TED stands for Technology, Entertainment, Design, and people with something unique and important to say are invited to speak at TED Talk conferences globally. Now, you can catch them online as well as some of these talks become hugely popular. Not in small part because of the speaker's ability to hold the audience's attention. In a new article in VoiceOver Extra, Sean Pratt, an acclaimed and prolific narrator of nonfiction audiobooks, details how he uses the TED Talk concept to keep his narrations conversational, funny, insightful, animated, and relaxed. First, he says, determine if the book you will narrate is first-person nonfiction, where the author relates to the topic on a personal level, or second-person nonfiction, where the author addresses the reader, for instance, telling readers what to do. Then, prepare for the narration as if you'll be walking on stage addressing 50 or 50,000 people. The book essentially becomes your talk, and you want to be engaging, enthusiastic, and entertaining. There are many more aspects of how to do this, of course, but this is a start for your new thinking. Now, you can find more in this article and many hundreds more on voiceoverextra.com, your daily resource for voiceover success.
Yes. Thank you for that, Dan.
Yes, and if you're hearing some talking in the background, it's because we're at Marcy's cousin Judy's house, which is a very nice house.
Dan, you're being a very good husband, cutting away from the show to have a party with your in-laws. Very smart of you.
Well, they all left.
Okay.
It's 9 o'clock here in the East. Now it's suddenly, I got somebody sleeping on the couch over here.
They're it's just a school night.
Table. Yeah, it's a school night. No, it's the middle of summer.
It's a school night where I am. I took my daughter to her first day of first grade today.
Ooh.
Yeah, man.
Very cool.
That was pretty surreal. But she was ready to go. She was very happy to be there. No problems, no tears, no stress, no clinging. She was ready to rock.
Yeah. Well, if you don't get away without the clinging, you're ahead of the game.
Yeah. No, we did really well. We're very lucky to have a kid who's that ready. I was going to talk
because
it kind of ties into what we're going to be talking about tonight, because the topic of headset mics or head-worn mics came in. You'll see a clip later of Richard in action doing some mocap. And there's also a really cool clip online. If you type into YouTube, Cumberbatch, what's his name? Why did I forget it? Benedict Cumberbatch. You'll find a shot of him acting mocap, and then you'll find a shot of him acting the lines with a microphone on his head-worn mic, but he's still physically acting the lines. It's really, really interesting. So it's like physical voiceover. I don't know how to describe it. But in order to be able to do something like that, you got to have a head-worn microphone, because in the world of filmmaking, you have the luxury of having somebody who's trained as a boom operator following your movements around as a mic, with the mic. Can you imagine how awesome it'd be in your own studio if you had somebody who was always keeping the mic at the right placement on your mouth at all times while you're sort of acting out the lines using body movements? You know, maybe one day you're a little bit further, a little closer. Well, we can't do that yet. We don't have like this amazing robotic microphone arm that always keeps the mic on you. That could happen. But for now, we could definitely use a boom mic that attaches to your head over your ear, or one that attaches to the side of your headphones. And there are some microphones out there whose quality now is, I'd say, up to par. I do plan on doing some tests on some of these mics. B&H is going to send me one of these really high quality DPA brand headset microphones to try out and see if it's quiet enough. I'm not worried if the quality is good enough, because I know the quality is great, but is it low enough noise so that we can record a good sounding voiceover track? The best one I've seen so far has a signal to noise ratio of about 68 dB, which should be good enough for most voiceover work. I think it's pretty rare that anybody with a home studio can get as much as 68 dB of dynamic range. What does that mean? That's the quietest thing the microphone can hear before it just sort of turns to noise, and then to the loudest thing that it can hear before it turns to distortion. So a mic with a signal-to-noise ratio like that should be able to capture voice really well. And I'm thinking, you voice actors doing audiobooks, anybody doing long form, and now, of course, mocap, you know, this is going to be a kind of a mic that we might start looking into using more. I'm just thinking how great it would be for, as a voice actor doing an audiobook, to be able to put on a mic onto the ear or onto their head, whatever kind they like to use, and always know that the mic is in the right place. And from day to day, week after week, the microphone is always exactly where it belongs. So they get consistency. It makes it easier for them to do punch-ins or do pickups. And you know how some of these audiobooks can drag on and on and on, and you might get pickups months later after recording the chapters. So to be able to just know the mic is always in the right place, I think would be huge. So I think that's a real big advantage of having something like that. So I'm looking forward to trying one out. I might be able to bring it on the show too here, and we can try it out in the booth. It's so funny because when I'm asking about microphones for this use, they always say, are you going to use it for this, 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 and this? And I go, none of the above. You know, I tell them we're going to use it in a booth, and they're thinking, what the heck are you thinking? Well, this is what I'm thinking. The capsule on this microphone is fantastic. If anybody saw Les Mis, the new Les Miserables film, the production, all of that stuff, all of the singing, all of the dialogue, everything you heard on screen was done with a micro dot, extremely tiny microphone, and you're hearing them doing it real time. So you can tell the quality is definitely there.
Yeah. You can see the mics in the movie, you know, but it definitely did capture them as it's made it sound very real. Some people were very critical of it and stuff, but
could you see them? Could you see mics in the movie?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But you know, they tried to hide them as best they could.
Yeah. Cause what I remember reading was that they actually used CGI to paint out the mics frame by frame so they wouldn't be visible on camera.
Well, that was expensive.
It was expensive.
All they had to do was hide it in Russell Crowe's beard, you know, and then I never would have known.
Well, I mean, what they usually do, like in Broadway and theater, is the mics are hair worn. So they're weaved up through the back of the neck, and the mic element is up above the hairline. Yeah. That's what's done really commonly in Broadway now. It allows them to do rapid costume changes, and the mic is never displaced. Because, man, I did a theater show one time in college with 8 wireless mics, and we didn't have head-worn stuff. It was all taped to their bodies, you know. And I had to put the transmitter in a condom so that it wouldn't short out from all the sweat. I mean, it was crazy how hard it was. Now everything's waterproof. You know, the technology is so much better. It's just really has changed a lot.
Yeah. Are we going to see that with voiceover, though? Are people going to start using headsets? Interesting.
Why not? It changes the paradigm a bit. You've always thought that you got to have a nice, big, large diaphragm condenser. But maybe it just could be a specialty mic that becomes something that's more comfortable to use, you know?
Yeah, and we can talk a little bit about this too with Richard too. It might be an interesting way to talk about, you know, doing this and mocap at the same time. Which mm-hmm. case you probably need something like that.
That's right.
Or somebody's holding a booma in front of you.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, we do have Richard Dorton coming up in just a couple of minutes here, and if you've got a question for us, all you got to do is go into the chat room and type it in there. Hopefully, somebody's in there and they'll pass it on to us. But we're going to talk to him about mocap and teaching mocap and stuff like that. But one of the things we do have to do before all of that, it's really, really, really important, is talk about our sponsors. For example, we have to thank our sponsors like Harlan Hogan.
That's right. VoiceOver Extra.
Edge Studio.
Mm-hmm. Source Elements.
And Rehearsal App and
Antland Productions.
Where you can get yourself a killer demo. Right. All righty. Well, Richard Dorton's coming up next. And so don't go anywhere. We're right here on VoiceOver Body Shop, and we'll be back in just a minute.
VoiceOver Extra, the voiceover industry's online news, education, and resource center 24/7. Hundreds, probably thousands of free how-to articles for voiceover success, ranging from home studio to voice acting to business. A free voiceover industry directory, calendar of industry events, resource links, a store, and much more. Bi-monthly webinars on all topics of voiceover, free subscriptions to newsletters, reports, announcements, daily news, and features at voiceoverextra.com.
Hiya, VO friends. You say you ain't booked a VO gig in 7 years, and your demo is so old that you can hear the clicks from the stock music records? and you hear so much tape hiss that you run to the sink to see if the faucet is running. And the engineer used so much echo on your voice that it sounds like it was recorded in the Grand Canyon. And the scripts seem a bit dated, too, advertising the new and improved 1938 Plymouth Road King. Is that what's been troubling you, Bunky?
Well, lift your head up high and take a walk in the sun. Your demo can be killer, too. Just contact Uncle Roy at AtlantProductions.com and book yourself a shiny new killer demo. Show your stick-to-itiveness and show the world. You'll never give up, never give up, never give up. That dream.
Hey everybody, welcome back to VoiceOver Body Shop. Before we move on, I do have to put a little word in for one of our sponsors, and that's Source Elements. Source Elements is the creators of and the producers of the amazing software Source Connect. If you're a voice actor who's kind of upping your game and doing more real-time voice work with studios, you're not just recording or recording on your own, you're actually working with a production, live, with producers on the other end listening, sometimes clients. Source Connect is pretty much the biggest option out there in terms of they've been around the longest. They're in the most studios, I'd say, at this point. And it's probably the one you're going to be looking at if you're working at the ISDN kind of level of voiceover work. ISDN is getting harder to get. It's getting more expensive. And it's actually kind of getting less reliable. So Source Connect is a really great backup for ISDN. And nowadays, I'm starting to hear of ISDN being a backup to Source Connect. So if you're interested in having something like that in your studio, if you've never needed it yet, maybe it's not time to buy, but at least get a demo. You can go to sourceelements.com, source-elements.com, and you can get a 15-day free trial of that software and give it a shot right away. They also have their Source Connect Now software, which is still beta. It's actually just runs on Google Chrome, and it's totally free. You can start using that to connect with clients and have them listen in on your sessions right away. Just send them a link. SourceElements.com. Thanks a lot for your sponsorship of VOBS. We'll be right back.
Learn the latest in voiceover technology, business, and good old-fashioned acting.
I really like your bracelet. It's awesome.
Hey, Paul, where did you get that watch?
That's really cool.
And a hamburger with no cheese, please.
Every Monday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, only on VoiceOverBodyShop.com.
Her slavering jaws into our sacred genitals! Kill her! Wipe her out! I say again, this is no time for weakness! Arise. Arise and be glorious! This is my destiny!
That was badass.
Woo! Right.
Here we go. We got Richard. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming in, man. My pleasure.
Well, we got Dan here. Dan's going to be checking in too from all the way over in Buffalo. But while I'm here, I wanted to say thanks for coming. We can see the top of Dan's head. That's pretty good. Thanks a lot for coming in, man. I know your world is. I'm finding out things as we've been talking because I had this assumption that mocap was not something different, but what it included and what it didn't include. I had this assumption that a mocap actor was by default somebody who was going to be heard on camera, and didn't realize how those two worlds are actually separated. Can you tell us a little bit about the origination of mocap and how you kind of became part of it?
Well, I think mocap first started out as a way to they were using it in medical field, you know, to check the way people moved if they had injuries and things like that. It really started in the medical field, and then it started just with the technology. They were able to, you know, you have people like James Cameron who took advantage of it and started using it to help animate, you know.
Right.
My first experience with it really came right after Titanic. Titanic was, they used mocap a lot for stunts, and then the gaming community started using it to help speed up animation. You know, it was a really big conflict on hand animation and keyframe animation to using capturing motion, where animators like, that's not real, you know, and but it sped up the process.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough to just get in like right when it was sort of, you know, making the transition into video games. I was just very, very lucky. I came to LA in 2000 to try to be a stuntman, and I was sent on my first audition after joining a stunt agency, and they said, you're going to go for this mocap thing. And it was for Scooby-Doo and Night of 100 Frights. It was like the only information they gave me was, you're auditioning for Shaggy. You have to go in, you have to walk like Shaggy. You have to act like a gorilla. You have to act like a monster. You need to fall down. You have to dance and act like a gorilla. And so that was
it.
That's all I knew. And I showed up in a room full of stunt guys who were like, what are we doing? And I'm like, it's Scooby-Doo. You know, it's Shaggy.
Right.
And the night before, I watched Nick at Night. I downloaded some pictures, and I brought it in, and I shared it with all the guys. I'm like, oh, look, this is what Shaggy looks like. I actually, since I was new to L.A., I wore a red T-shirt and green pants like Shaggy. Yeah, I showed up kind of dressed like him. And I shared all my information with people because we didn't know what to, you know, what to do. And everyone went, you go first.
So you became the guy.
I became the guinea pig. Really, it turned out that the all the stuntmen wanted to do was fall down. Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted to run and jump and fall and hurt themselves. And I'm like, this is Shaggy. You know, you get to be these characters. And so I went first, and everybody just – it was an open room, so everybody watched everybody audition. So they copied everything I did, but I got the job.
Do you think they were – so do you think all these stunt actors were casted by someone that just didn't know what they're to look for when it comes to casting mocap? Is that why they were all stunt actors?
Well, the
– players?
The motion capture studio was doing the casting, so it really didn't go out to casting directors. And even now, if a mocap goes out to a casting director, they still don't know what it is. So the motion capture studio held the audition, and they kind of explained, well, we put these markers on you, and you move around, and we capture your skeleton. You know, that was kind of the basic beginning of it for me. Yeah.
So essentially, what you're doing here is it's simply acting with a lot of dots on you.
I tell my students, if you're a good actor, you're going to end up in the volume eventually, because it is. It's an acting, you know, it's just another form of acting. So if you're a good actor, you're going to end up in the suit. But there are some things you have to do and know, and you have to be able to physically bring characters to life. So that's the fun part of it, you know, and the interesting part of it. Not everybody can do voiceover. And not everybody can do stunts, and not everybody can do martial arts. So it's finding the right people. When I started, voiceover, all video games were being recorded later. Mm-hmm. So I was just the body. Mm-hmm. I would, even if I did dialogue, it was going to get it was going to get in, ended up dubbed over by somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know,
didn't they realize that you were classically trained actor and that you could do all these sorts of things, or did you have to tell them that? Or
come on, it's Hollywood.
I'm sorry.
I mean, you know, I this is still the same thing. Multiple people bring multiple characters to life all the time. You know, I might be the body, somebody might be the voice, somebody might be the face. It's the same, you know, I kind of fell into this, because being a stunt person, I fell into the hidden performer that wasn't seen, you know. So a lot of voice actors who would voice the characters took credit for my work. But as a stunt person, you know, you stay back and you don't say anything. You just kind of, you know that you took the punch in the face. You knew that you climbed the fence and you fell down and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
So
you knew you were totally behind the scenes. And it's to this day, though, is any of the mocap, are any of the mocap players credited?
Yes.
And are you credited as mocap, or are you credited as stunts, or is it just depend on whether you're heard on the soundtrack or what? How does it work?
It's gotten better. And actually, I think Tom Hanks really helped us a lot, because we like to refer to it now as performance capture, because you are performing. You are, I mean, there are two different types of mocap,
from
too.
From the train movie. That,
yes, Polar Express.
Polar Express, that was Tom Hanks.
Yeah, right. So he, by coining the phrase performance capture, it really brought a little more legitimacy to what we do. So there's also two different forms of mocap that people don't know about. You have in-game, for video games, at least you have in-game performance, mm-hmm. which is all the moves, the running, the jumping, the diving, the punching, the opening the doors. That's your in-game moves. And then you have mm-hmm. cinematics, which is your storytelling elements, you know, your movies that you make. Mm-hmm. Not everybody can do either or.
Oh, wow.
So when mocap first started, like, I was doing all of it, in-game and then doing cinematics, but mostly by myself. So I was acting against myself.
Wow.
You know, because the technology wasn't ready to capture 12 people like it is now at the same time. So
12, you can have 12 people on set all captured?
I think the biggest capture done most recently is, I think, 19, maybe 25, yeah. Just depends on the volume size.
Yeah.
So
there was a very interesting scene in a very popular program, Mozart in the Jungle, where they had all of these conductors dressed up for doing a mocap thing, and they end up having this huge fight on the set, and they're all wearing these mocap uniforms. So people got to see what that was actually like. No one saw what they were actually doing in the scene or what the scene was. But
I haven't seen that.
Oh, well, you've got to watch. It's a great show.
I mean, I like that show.
A lot of great shows coming out of Hollywood on Netflix that was actually on Amazon. But
yeah.
So how does one train to do this type of thing? I mean, as you said, it's acting, and you were able to get into it on the ground floor as they were breaking this technology. But obviously, there's going to be a need for better trained people and people who can start doing that. How does one train for this?
Well, because there are two different forms of mocap, the in-game and the cinematics. I tell people, if you're going to do cinematics, voice actors are great for cinematics because you are now capturing their voice with their movement. So you have to be a good actor. There are small technical things that you should know when you go into a mocap volume. You know, be careful about crossing your arms because you're blocking these markers. And I actually brought a little marker here that people think these are sensors, and they're basically little sponge balls now that are covered with reflective tape that get put on your suit and joint areas, so, you know, we can track that because we're just basically tracking your skeleton.
Can you show it to this camera right here? Let me see if Andrew can get that. There you go. Cool.
That's a little marker. It's just reflective tape.
Mm-hmm. I guess the number they put on you is kind of determine how much detail they can capture?
Yeah, different studios have different techniques. Yeah. Everybody has their own way. Usually about 65, 68 for your body.
Wow.
Then there's ways of doing smaller ones that go on your face that can be up to 90 on your face.
Jeez.
But then technology has changed now, so now we're just using high-def cameras for video reference, and you don't need these anymore. It just depends on the studios. There's so many. The technology has grown so much that there's no right way or wrong way anymore. But, you know, it's no sensor. It's a little soft, little piece of foam, you know, with reflective tape
on it. Like if you were to shine a flashlight, this is kind of like those outfits you can buy for jogging at night. That if a car headlight hit it, it just lights up like a bright.
You only need two mocap cameras to see that.
Yeah.
To know where it is in relative to space.
Two cameras.
That's it.
Oh, man, I thought but, it was going to be like cameras all around.
Well, you're surrounded by cameras. Yeah. I mean, I've been in studios as small as 12 cameras, 8 cameras. As long as two of them can see a marker, they can pinpoint where it is in space.
Right.
And that's basically, by the time they're done, they're capturing your skeleton. So as, if two can see it, then they know exactly where you are.
What was the first feature film that you know of that was using what we consider mocap now?
First feature film.
You're talking about Titanic at one point.
Titanic used it for the stunts and, you know, some special effects.
Bodies falling off the ship and stuff like that.
The color guy.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Michael Jackson used it for some music videos. And, I mean, Polar Express. And what came right before Polar Express? Beowulf came after Polar Express. But it did. They were able to capture more people, and they learned a little bit more about the technology too, because that's where the whole term of Uncanny Valley came.
With I was going to say that was the word I was looking for. Uncanny Valley. Explain in a nutshell what that means to you.
It's kind of where animation or the technology, when you're creating a face, where the where human eye looks at it and thinks that it's really weird and odd, you know, and we don't register it as human, and it kind of freaks us out. So nowadays, like if you look at some of the animations of that are done, it's more realistic looking and you can kind of accept that. Early, if you go back and look at Polar Express, you're like, those are creepy, weird. It's like how robots have that effect on you because our human eye, we're detecting something subconsciously that it's not real.
Yeah.
So with cinematics, you just have to be a good actor, know some technical stuff about what not to do. But if you're going to get into the in-game portion of stuff, you know, it helps to have a skill.
Yes.
I'm not a martial artist, so I don't claim to do martial arts in games. They go hire real ninjas. That's, you know, that's what I'm like. I know the right people.
Real life ninjas.
Yeah. If somebody says, do you have somebody who can do, you know, wushu swords? I can call 12 people. I will not take credit for that and do that. Unlike some people that take credit for what I do. Yeah, I mean, and that's a whole other crazy world. But, you know, I mean, I truly believe that there's enough work out there for everybody. And it's proving it now with the way voiceover has moved into the video game world really, really strong. I mean, there's some great voice actors that, I mean, why wouldn't you want them in your game, you know?
Yeah. Much better than the secretary from The Office doing those voices. So, yeah. All right, well, we'll talk a little bit more about the fact that, you know, we're talking, this is a voiceover show, and we're talking about mocap, and there's got to be a relationship in it. So we'll get into a little bit more about that in just a minute. So we'll take a break, and we'll be right back.
Just sit back and relax. It's time for some announcements.
Every Monday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific.
Voiceover Body Shop. I love when they talk BS about you.
Learning never ends.
You continue to grow.
Edge Studio has grown. Pursue multiple disciplines in tandem and grow your career. We've added new courses in a new curriculum.
We picked the best coaches from the community of working voice actors.
A new technology division, engineering and consulting, led by George Whittam.
Follow your dream.
Sign up for advanced learning or register for an introduction to voice acting or foundation studies program.
See it all now
at the new Edge.
All right. You know, one of the things we're talking about acting tonight, I mean, really severe acting. Well, not severe acting, but real serious acting. It can be severe in some cases. But, you know, we've been telling you about Rehearsal Pro, the app for actors. Well, now it's there. You can get it. And our great friend, David H. Lawrence, the 17th, has it out there on the internet in the App Store. And you can get it. And it's really fabulous. And the thing is Rehearsal app is in the Apple Store, and they approved it very, very quickly, so it must be a really great app. Now, it has over 150 new features and options, all designed to make the industry standard rehearsal app even more valuable to the professional actor. And by the way, kids, that's what we do as voice actors. We are professional actors. And that includes, this is one of the great little things that the rehearsal app has. It includes a smooth as silk voiceover audition submission function. So to get this great app and check it out and see how well it works for not just for learning your lines, you know, if you're doing a lot of on-camera work and stuff, but you can see how it can also help you with your auditions. Visit rehearsal.pro, not .com, rehearsal.pro. That's rehearsal.pro, or search for rehearsal app in the App Store. Be off book and book more work with Rehearsal Pro.
Man, there's one show that I can't miss. It's called VOBS. And a lot of people are like, VOBS? What is that? Man, it's BS about VO. And I love VO. How much BS is going to be in this show? There's only one way to find out, baby.
You're listening to VOBS. You're listening to VOBS.
All right, we're back here. Are we back?
Yes, we're back.
All right. Sometimes it's hard to tell. You never know what's going on because I'm so far away. But anyway, we're back with Richard Dorton. We're talking about mocap or performance cap, in which case they call it perf cap. Right?
That works for me.
Okay, perf cap. First, they just renamed the Buff football stadium here in Buffalo for a new era cap, and are now calling it the Cap.
The Cap.
So if you hear that during a football game, you'll know why. All right, now seeing as most of our audience is voice actors, because that's what our show is about, how can this skill of learning mocap benefit them?
Well, I think one thing that I teach, because I've been teaching mocap performance on how to one thing we need to do is learn to create our characters, you know, so it is totally an acting skill. But there are certain things that when you're stuck behind, copy and you're standing at a music stand, you know, or you're doing dialogue, that's one thing. And I love watching voice actors get into their parts and moving. But it's the same thing happens on the mocap stage. You're creating a character from the first time you walk to the way you stand. And you have to carry that through the whole time. So there are certain things. It's almost like mime training almost, because with some of the stuff I do, my voice is taken away. My face is taken away. It's not being captured, just my body. So I have to be able to bring this character to life, you know, without any audio. I mean, I make a lot of noise when I mocap. When I do monsters and creatures, I bend and I curl and I scream and yell. But half the time, the clients aren't recording the audio. So I have to be able to make sure that my body knows what I'm doing, what I'm, you know. And so for voice actors, getting out from behind the stand is the best thing for them. I recently worked on a shoot where we brought in a guy because he had an amazing voice, but he hadn't been out from behind the stand for, I'm going to say, 25 years. So when he got on set, he didn't know, he couldn't remember his lines. He was so used to reading them that we had to make giant cue cards for him.
Yeah, needed rehearsal.pro is what he needed.
Yeah, right.
That's a good plug. Good. Yeah,
well done.
But, physically, he wasn't ready as an actor, you know, because he wasn't used to it. He hadn't done it in so many years. I do get asked a lot of times to watch someone else's performance. And when they leave, come back and alter it or change it or fix it, just depending on if you know, physically they can't fall down or they can't, you know, they can't create a monster. So that's why, to me, there's multiple people who bring a character to life. So you have to be flexible. And as a voice actor, you have to have certain skills. You know, don't say, if you have never fired a gun, go take a gun class. Go shoot a gun. You may not ever have to do it again, but you'll know the difference. You'll know what recoil feels like. You know, these are all part of your acting training things that we do as normal actors, you know, but there's certain little things that can help a voice actor, get a jump on the next person.
Now we have some actors out in the studio tonight, so hopefully we can get out there and maybe demonstrate some stuff out there. Maybe no, not you guys. You're not actors.
it's really interesting to put people in a position, because in a mocap suit, you're wearing Lycra. You're in like pajamas or your underwear, and you're in a black box. People think you shoot on green screen. Sometimes you do, mostly for film, but not for video games. You're in a space called the volume. You're by yourself or with one other person, and you use your imagination. It's kind of like a mixture of theater, film, and TV all together. So it's kind of scary. Most of the times we don't know, like the voice actors, we don't know what we're working on until we get to the studio. So they're expecting you to learn, to be ready to go. As an actor, your improv skills have to be on par. You have to be ready to make up stuff, because a shot list may say, guy punches someone in the face, and they do three takes. And then they say to you, how would you punch him in the face? So you get a chance to mix it up and change it up. You become part of the process. Now, it's not just a list of moves anymore, and that's like for in-game. And then for cinematics, some actors can be physical, can do some of their stunts, and then you work with a star and they don't want them to fall. You don't want Kevin Spacey to do a dive roll. He doesn't need to. So Richard, watch that. Kevin Spacey leaves. I do the dive roll, and they blend it together. So that also leads into some of the issues with whose performance it is, what performance it is, and then that ties into what happens with the unions and contracts and residuals that don't exist for games and things like that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that may all change soon. Who knows? Now, this is a skill for someone who may have access to this type of technology where they're using it. What about, the majority of our audience, which is not in Hollywood? Is it something that your work's going to start seeing in a lot of other places? Obviously, they do it in New York and maybe some other major broadcasting and production places. But is this something that you think will start to get around to much more places?
Well, I think with the way technology has grown, I'm finding that you don't have to have a mocap studio anymore. There are a lot of VFX houses that have built their own studios. The technology has come down in price. You can capture motion capture with your Xbox 360 in your own house. Wow. You can do it with your phone. That's now. True. There's so many different apps. So I think people will start to piece together their own, their own systems and do their own mocap. I mean, I have friends who have done short films. You don't need 12 cameras or 96 cameras anymore, for depending on what you're doing. All over the place.
I never thought about it, but now mocap is something built into Snapchat, sort of, right?
Yeah.
The ability to show like a dog's tongue coming out of your face in real time that follows your face. Isn't that kind of a form of mocap in a way?
Well, it's animation that's already pre-canned.
But it's somehow attached to your face.
There's this new technology that's happening, with real time, where you can capture facial movement real time on a character, a Hellblade. The examples, if you look YouTube Hellblade.
You mean you can be captured into the game as you're sitting there?
You're filming as your face is moving, as you're performing. That's all really in the awesome. Game engine right now. But on top of just like you, that's just doesn't happen right away. On top of that, the studios are investing a lot of money into the actor. So I say you have to be good at what you do. You have to, before a studio drops a couple $1,000s on you to send you to get scanned, to get you, do all this other stuff, you have to be a good actor. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. Look at this. I know you guys can't see it on camera. Maybe I can figure out how to turn it around so you can see it. But I'm actually triggering the tongue with my mouth.
Yeah.
I'll put a clip of that in the. I mean, this stuff is in a dumb chatting thing.
Exactly.
It's not even. It's just purely a game.
It's happening everywhere. So I think people will start to learn that, hey, especially for special effects in movies and short mm-hmm. films and things like that, they're going to start to be able to do their own stuff. I worked with a company who gave me a suit, Perception Neuron, mm-hmm. and they gave me a suit, and it's an external kind of like a exoskeleton suit where the sensors are actually built into it.
Yeah.
So I'm not tethered to anything anymore.
Mm-hmm. Keep talking.
Right.
I'm going to put you on. I'm okay. going to put you. I'm putting the suit on you right now.
So that's completely.
You can sort of see it there. Yeah.
Can you see it? It's completely.
Here we go. Here we go. Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
That doesn't look good. Do I have ears too? There we go.
Just open your mouth.
So. Okay, I'll just keep.
Okay, that's not mocap. All right, fine. But, I mean, that's where it's going. Like, if you can do that with a phone, imagine what you can do with a video game where your camera is filming your face mm-hmm. and your face is mapped onto your player.
I mean,
well, that's going to be,
you know.
I'm going to want to start gaming again.
Exactly. you can do that. You'll be able to do that on your Xbox. You'll be able to do that on your PlayStation. And that's the whole new thing of where technology is growing. So it's going to be everywhere. So, yes, you can find it. You know, if you build it, they will come.
No doubt.
Sounds cool. All right. So now you're teaching this. Where and how are you doing this? And are you doing it online? Are you doing it, obviously, in physical classes, too?
Yes. I was lucky enough to hook up with the mocapvault.com. Oliver Hollis Lake is out in London, and he's kind of like my... I don't want to say doppelganger, but he's done almost as many games as I have, you know, in Europe. So he started teaching some beginning mocap classes because he felt the need. And, you know, we're not getting any younger, and I'm getting tired of getting punched in the face and falling down. So it's time to bring up the new generation and let them take over. But Oliver helped bring me into teaching his technique, and I opened up the LA branch and started teaching my mocap classes out here. Intro to mocap, giving a little bit of history of the mocap and you know, stuff that I do. We teach basic movement, character building, how to create environments with your body, because that's, you know, like I said, when you're in a black box, how do you know my character is cold? You know, we like to teach the basics of creating character, how to adjust the body, how to move the body, and then scene study on how, because like I said, a lot of the game studios will give us a scene that you don't know you're prepared for,
mm-hmm.
and I like to teach them how to break down a script really fast and how to give the director options, okay. you know, and choices as an actor.
Well, can we, like, you know, can you give a quick demonstration, you say, using somebody in our audience there and show us, like, maybe a quick skill that you might want to teach somebody?
Oh, yes. This is good. Okay. Stand up, Jay.
Do you want to go over there with them, or can you do it from here?
I can do it from here first.
Okay.
Well, let me ask you this, Dan. If I said, create a pirate, okay, if I need you to create a pirate, what is the first thing you would do?
Arr.
Exactly. Now, what if I'm not capturing your face? You know, what if I'm not capturing your voice? How do I know that you're a pirate?
Well, then you would go, or something like that.
But I'm not capturing your face, and I'm not capturing your voice. What do you do physically? Jay, stand up.
Camera on, Jay. Jay Preston, ladies and gentlemen.
There he is. Awesome.
Yeah. Raise up the cam just a little bit. There we go. All right. We're good.
But, okay, so let's say he's a peg leg pirate, you know? How is he going to... If I'm not capturing his face, if I'm not saying he's a pirate, you know, physically we need to be able to look at him and watch him move and watch him, you know, act. So give me a peg leg walk, right?
Oh, look, I'm way off screen now.
This theater sure is small.
I don't smell bad. You don't smell bad.
There you go.
There's another shot.
Luckily, I have a bum leg.
So. Well, one of the, like something like that, peg leg pirate. When we do our classes, I make I make students wear a mask so they can't R and they can't talk.
Oh, wow.
So physically, I ask them to bring their pirate to life first, and then I jump in and I make corrections and things like that, or I give them suggestions of what might help them. You know, if you knew, you know, other than putting a pirate parrot on my shoulder, you know, but if I tie a bandana on my head, you know, even if I physically adjust an eye patch or something, then all of a sudden you're like, oh, now I see what he's doing. A lot of times with that particular character, if we do that example, people guess angry janitor, you know. I don't understand why, but angry janitor seems to be a really good description. And a lot of times people will guess, you know, what the action is, but they still won't tell me who the character is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing that I try to teach my students is be very, very specific on the characters you create, because now that you've tweaked them and you've honed them, you have to be that character the whole way through. There's also a lot of people like to imaginary props pop up everywhere. Look over there. Like, where did the binocular come from? And then they'll do this. I don't know. I don't own many binoculars that separate, you know, and right. disappear in your hand. And, so I teach specific things like that. If you're going to pull out the binocular, you know, and look, and you got to put it back. And you know, there are a lot of tricks that we use because we don't get to use real props sometimes. Guns are made out of broomsticks. You know, I use a leaf blower for big, giant guns that are created in games.
Nice.
We just put markers on it.
Cool.
So there's a little tricks and skills and things that, you know, you can be made aware of. Chainsaws, like, who wants to have a real chainsaw on set if you don't need it?
Right.
Really, it smells bad anyway. We got a great bunch of questions from our audience, and one of them was actually mailed in earlier by our number one donor and great friend Eric Aragoni. He goes, "Here's a question: was there an article in the trades at the end of June about a district court judge blocking the use of MOVA and MOVA Tech by all licensees until further notice? How has this affected the use of performance capture since? Thanks. Eric Aragoni."
Well, I think on that particular project, and facial capture technology is really expensive. That's the one thing people need to know about mocap. It's really expensive. The data that's captured for your body is usually charged per second. So imagine, if you're renting a studio for $10,000 a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's nothing compared to the character seconds that the client is paying for. So if I do a move that takes 5 seconds, boom, they're paying for that 5 second move at $25 a second or something like that. Imagine capturing 300 moves, you know, how expensive that becomes, because some of the moves are now, especially in cinematics, could be a 2 minute scene between two people.
Yeah.
So now you're paying for my move, and they're paying for your move at character seconds. So that's one thing. Now we get into MOVA, where we're doing face, you know, face capture. And that particular project is a private problem within the company, mm-hmm. on how it was sold. So that's expensive. They've already captured their data, but they're not allowed to use it. So,
oh, wow.
It's affecting the companies that have already bought into the system,
mm-hmm.
but there's other techniques. There's other companies out there that could do the same thing. It's just now, it's a money thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Dan?
Well, Dan's doing something else right now. So I will say we're going to take a break, because we're going to take a break now anyway. And we'll be right back with a lot more audience questions with Richard. Thanks for coming, man.
Thank you.
VoiceOver Body Shop. Learn the latest in voiceover technology. Learn how to get rid of that. VoiceOver Body Shop. 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific on VOBS.US.
VoiceOver Body Shop, where you can learn everything from mic technique to how to market your voiceover business to acting your way out of a wet paper sack, which is my favorite, by the way.
Thanks for joining us once again for another episode of VoiceOver Body Shop.
Fighting broke out overnight for Sunday's Indy.
What do you want to watch tonight?
I don't know. I mean, the same stuff's always on all the time.
Oh, I am so sick of American Pickers. What about VOBS?
Yes! Oh my gosh, you just read my mind!
I can't believe
That's
it.
Perfect!
I want to watch it because you know why? They've got the best BS about VO.
VOBS. Mondays, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific on VOBS.us.
All right. You know, one of our best sponsors is a great guy by the name of Harlan Hogan and his website, voiceoveressentials.com. Now, we all know what he does. He has the best stuff you could possibly need for voiceover. If he doesn't have it, you probably don't need it, as Garrison Keillor once said, or said many, many times. But the most important thing about his website is it's not just for voice actors finding stuff. He now has some great clients, big-time corporations, who also get their stuff and advice from Harlan Hogan at voiceoveressentials.com because they know what a great site it is for getting all the right stuff to do voiceover. Because we're not the only ones doing voiceover. There are, you know, there's some corporate weenies out there that need to have good sound capture and things like that, or they're doing their e-learning, or they're doing it on site instead of hiring us professionals. But they are buying the stuff from Harlan Hogan, and they are asking him about what is the best stuff to use. So it's really important to know that he has the best website for voiceover equipment out there. So go on over to voiceoveressentials.com, where you can get great stuff like the Portabooth Pro and the Portabooth Plus, and the Harlan Hogan VO1A voice over signature series microphone, completely designed specifically for voiceover, not for doing mocap or for doing, what do they call that thing where change the tone of your voice or anything like that. You're not singing into this mic. It's designed for doing voiceover. And he also has some great books on voiceover by the best authors talking about voiceover teaching technique. So go over there and buy his stuff because he guarantees it. You don't like it, which is absolutely impossible. But if it does happen, send it back. He's really good about returns and things along those lines. So go over to voiceoveressentials.com. The easiest way is to go to the bottom of our page that you're watching the show on right now and click on the picture of Harlan talking into his voiceover Pro booth, and it'll take you right there, and he'll know we sent you, and that's the most important thing. So thanks, Harlan Hogan and voiceoveressentials.com for being our sponsor for the last 5.5 years. You're our buddy, and you make this show possible.
Are you confused about how to set up and maintain a professional quality voiceover studio? No wonder. The information out there is mostly mythology. This is the best microphone to use. You have to have a preamp. You need a soundproof booth. This software is the best. Your audio must be broadcast quality. Consult with someone who knows the truth. Someone who's been there, in the trenches, doing voiceover for over 30 years. Someone with unparalleled experience with voiceover studios. Who's worked with hundreds of voice actors and designed hundreds of personal studios. He knows how to teach and cares about your success in one of the harshest environments known to voiceover, your home. Dan Leonard, the Home Studio Master. Separate myth from fact and get a handle on your personal voiceover studio. Contact the Home Studio Master at homevoiceoverstudio.com. Drop off a specimen of your dry audio for a free analysis.
Hey, we're back.
All right. Yeah. Oh, nice shirt.
Thank you, man.
I think, you know, somebody gave us a bunch of Hawaiian shirts. I think maybe we should have Hawaiian shirt uniforms.
I think so. I think any audience member that comes in is going to be asked to wear or required to wear a Hawaiian shirt, starting with tonight. Because everybody's wearing Hawaiian shirts today in the studio.
Amazing how well they all fit is, by the way. That's a nice one. That one's mine, by the way. Anyway, we're here with Richard Dorton. We're talking about mocap or perfcap or whatever you want to call it, and we got a lot of great questions from our audience. One from Paul Stefano for Richard. He says, "Does Richard do any sports game? Is it any different? Is it harder?
use. Oh, most of the sports games. most of the sports games use real athletes, you know. So I just got through doing a promotion for the WWE video game, 2K2017. They use wrestlers to do that game. Basketball, the stars, or college students, basketball players will play for 2K, you know, basketball games, baseball. Every now and then, I might be asked to do something, but in general, most of the sports games really rely on using athletes from that sport. It just makes sense. Same thing as I'm not a ninja, I won't be doing ninja game.
That's how you get the authenticity.
Yeah.
You get the real people.
And, I mean, every now and then, you'll get, you know, Carmelo Anthony to come in, and he'll shoot all day. So you have his moves. They're authentic. That's what you really want. That's wow. what you're paying for the game. You know, so that's...
When you say you just came back from promotion, what was your role in promoting?
One of the things that I've been able to do is being on this side and knowing what games, you know, what the gamers like. Mm-hmm. I'm working with an event company that goes out and promotes to the press gaming events. We bring the press in. We let them play the game. I take them on excursions. You know, the most recent one I did was The Division, which Tom Clancy's The Division takes place in New York. Mm-hmm. We created an event where we brought in 80 international press. We networked 50 game stations. We let them play the game all day. They interviewed the designers, the developers, and then I took them to places that took place in the game. I took them to Times Square on a tour. I took them to rooftop view of the city, you know. And we actually, our event happened in New York the week after the blizzard.
Oh, no
so
kidding.
we thought our event was going to be destroyed, but there was snow everywhere, and there's snow in the game, so it was like perfect
nice
setup.
Time.
And yeah, so I'm doing promotions now for games, you know, that tie them into different cities. I did one in Chicago for Watch Dogs. Mm-hmm. It took place in Chicago. Networked 50 game stations. They played, interviewed the designers, developers. Since that was a hacking game, we had a hacking expert come in. And in the middle of our event, he hacked some guy's phone.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it was crazy. And then we took him on the tour of the city. This is where, you know, the Chicago Theater, this is the Chicago Tribune. We took him to all these different places that happened in the game.
The land gaming stuff. So I was playing Half-Life.
Yeah.
This was a video game. And we would carry all of our computers into this one friend's house. CRTs, big ass 20-inch tube monitors that weigh like 40 pounds, towers, everything. That was big time. I mean, I've kind of fallen out of it, but after you've told me what's coming down the pipeline, I don't know, man. I might be getting a... What is it? What's the big game station? What's the really good one for playing this kind of work? This type of game. Is it the Xbox right now getting a lot of them? Or
you know,
PS.
I'm finding PS, you know, the PS4s now seem to be... they can handle the networking. They can handle... The multiplayer is a lot better. A lot of the game companies, like when we're doing our events, are sending their dev kits, you know, on PS4s.
Oh, no kidding. A question came in from DVox, one of our viewers. He asks a lot of great questions. He's saying, regarding two cameras and knowing the space. So the space has to be carefully defined. Is that true? In other words, this is done in a studio, not like out in an open space like in a park. It has to be done in an enclosed space.
Well, that's the beauty of the technology. If we're talking about a system that uses these, Vicon, I'll remember the name of this other company. Okay. They have fixed camera systems. Yeah. So, yes, our volume, depending on the amount of cameras.
Oh, that's the word I was thinking of, volume.
Volume.
You call the volume the space in which
that
you
we're working in, yes.
Gotcha.
The mocap volume is the stage.
Gotcha.
So, those fixed cameras, you know, they can only cover a certain amount of room. But like the other suit that's like the exoskeleton, you can shoot outside because you're only limited by how far your wireless transmitter can capture
nice.
It.
Okay.
So different systems work different ways. Mm-hmm. So yes, one studio I work in has 96 cameras. So the volume space, you know, is ginormous.
Wow.
And then you work with... 8-camera system, and you're going to be working in a 12 by 12 space, and that's it. You step out of it, you lose the data.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. All right. Here's a question from Jackson Daniel. make sure I understand this one. Do you ever prepare with the voice actor for performance unity?
I guess he's saying, like, if there's going to be a separate voice actor, which I guess a lot of times there are you and them ever at the same place at the same time, or do you ever in any way communicate or work together? Maybe that's what he's asking.
You know, everybody... Maybe. Go ahead, Dan.
No, that's what I was... I figured that's the right... That's the question.
Most voice actors that I work with, we're working on cinematic scenes. Mm-hmm. So we're rehearsing. If we're lucky to get a rehearsal, you're rehearsing a scene like you would a movie or a TV show. The only difference between like working on a TV or movie in mocap, there is no downtime. There are no grips. There's no lighting.
Holy cow.
There's people
fast,
helping you maybe with props, you know. But in general, we shoot a scene. We try to shoot it three times. And then, you know, we do it first take, see how it feels. We do a second take. Hopefully we get it. And third take, they might say, go ahead and improv it a little bit or do it what feels natural. Mm-hmm. And then we move on to the next scene. We don't wait for anything to be moved. We don't go back to our trailers, you know. So it's most voice actors that I work with are going to be in cinematic scenes, you know. That's really when
does it
I
feel
work with
like a traditional film where they're like, okay, quiet on the set and action, or do the cameras just kind of keep rolling and they're like, all right, let's do it again, do it a third, you know, that kind of thing.
You know, it depends on the scene, but most of the times we want to break it into cuts.
Yeah.
So the beauty about motion capture is the direction can happen a lot later. We can shoot a scene, and once you concentrate on getting the best performance ever, mm-hmm. a director can go back in with a virtual camera and move around that scene and follow you as long as your performance is always going to be the same.
Yeah.
Camera move might be different, might mess up, but your performance is never going to change. So, I mean, the technology, it's amazing. So that's why when you're acting, you don't have to worry about all this stuff, you know, the camera in your face or whatever. You're just there with your partner. You do the best performance you can, and then, you know, all the technical stuff happens later.
It's all in post.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Reen Vogel asks, how does a person get this type of gigs? Is it via an agent, a voiceover agent, an on-camera? And are there jobs like these available? I think we touched on this too, outside of LA. She came in later. She apologized, but we talked about that earlier. How are you landing these jobs? Are you doing it through, are you doing demos? Do you have a reel? Are you doing it through an agent? How are you getting the work?
For me, because I've done almost 100 games, a lot of the people that I've worked for are repeat clients.
Oh, nice.
I mean, for you know, I've been lucky enough that I started in and the studios would just refer me. Richard Dorton does everything. You know, he has a variety of characters. So from my Scooby-Doo... From the very first game, playing Shaggy and 80 villains, the studio had a variety of character stuff to pick from to show their clients.
Yeah.
And that's how I got Darth Vader. I was the first person to play Darth Vader in a video game because they saw my Shaggy and they saw my witch and they saw my alligator man. And then the director at that time said, oh, he can play all these characters. He can do the Darth Vader walk. That was purely from a studio standpoint. House of Moves, they were like my agent. They just kept referring me to clients, and I would just show up, and like I didn't know what I was working on, but I knew I had enough skill to know how to do swords. I knew how to do guns. I knew how to, you know, fight.
But I think you said you did some casting yourself.
Yes.
So when you do casting, are you looking at a reel? Are you looking at auditions that were taped? How are people auditioning for this stuff?
Some are sent out to major casting directors, you know, so it's out there that way. And voice agents, places like Vox have started a mocap division to try to represent mocap actors. So they're going to get some auditions. So that's one way. The other thing I tell my people when you're creating your reels is to create a movement reel, an action reel, something that shows you have skill. If you can rock climb, if you can ski, if you can, you know, shoot guns, if you're a ninja, if you can do swords, you know, put all that on your reel. It's nice to have a mixture of skills because that's what I'm looking for. But I can also tell in a mocap audition, the minute somebody walks across the stage, I can spot from their walk, you know, if they have pigeon toes, if they have an injury, you mm-hmm. know, something like that. I can tell if they can carry their body. You know, there wow. are things that I always tell my students, skeletons don't lie. So you can try to hide the fact, but if you're walking near that arm is like flicking all the time, you know, it shows up.
You can't hide anything.
And I can tell. I mean, I have my students, it's the greatest exercise is to go into the next time you're in the grocery store, yeah. walk behind somebody in the aisle and try to walk like them.
Oh,
okay. Well, and you're going to be like, where is he carrying his weight? You know, where is
I do that all the time, by the way.
Right.
Took me out of a lot of supermarkets that way.
But that walk will come in handy somewhere in the volume. At some point, you're going to be doing a character and you're going to be like, oh, I'm going to make it that guy that, you know, likes the waddle uh-huh. when he walks. Uh-huh. But you can also, when I'm auditioning characters, I can go, oh, that guy's going to be a great gangster, you know, for my particular project. Or she's going to be a strong action hero. You can just tell, by the way, people adjust to direction too. And you can tell when people don't.
Amazing.
Very cool. Vincent Guy Cox asks, this is a pretty good question. Who are the best contacts to get introduced into mocap producers? I'm figuring you're probably one of them.
That would be me.
Pull out your wallet, kids.
The mocap studios are great places to send your resume to, but you don't ever want to walk into them unannounced because most of the time they're shooting on top secret projects.
Mm.
You know, you can't just walk into a mocap studio. I mean, these games are so protected, you know, just like voice actors who sign those NDAs and you can't talk about what you're working on. I mean, of course, and sometimes you don't even know you're working on Halo and you have no idea. And that's the downside mm-hmm. of the way these contracts are treated and things like that. But, mm-hmm. you know, you get near a studio that's working on some top secret project, you've just sunk yourself. So I tell people, go to the company's website, go to, you know, and find out who to contact. And I cast. Mm-hmm. Send your questions to me. I'm pretty open about that, you know. Look at Twitter. Mm-hmm. There are a ton of new motion capture actors out there who can help you. The one thing that I kind of was a little weary about teaching at first, because I'm like, why am I teaching people to do what I do? Because it's already hard enough field to get into. But I need people I trust. I need good actors. That's all I'm looking for. You know, I cast a ton of projects. And if I can't do it, like I'm not a, like I said, I'm not a ninja. I'm not a basketball player, but I can find you anyone who does that skill. And I want this community to grow, mm-hmm. you know. And
it's going to.
I've gotten my students new auditions now and some jobs. And I feel great as an instructor and as a teacher. That's, you know, I'm very proud of my students.
Oh, totally. I mean, somebody asked if this is the future of video games, and I'm thinking it's not the future. This is now. Like, this isn't
the
future.
It's the present. Yeah.
This is what's going on.
It's actually, and it's going to change again because of VR.
Uh-huh.
Because with virtual reality, now mocap, you're going to be able to go into a game, have an actor interact with you mm-hmm. who's in a mocap suit. You know, while you're, you know, in your VR headset, an actor will be outside with you, and you'll be interacting with his avatar. I mean, so the work is not going to die down.
Speaking of work, before we let you go, you brought a pile of stuff.
Oh,
just take a minute and show us some of the products that you've worked on or been involved with before you go.
You know how you always say, you know, you've made it when you have an action figure.
Yeah. Ooh, shoot, right? This guy. Oh, yeah, baby.
Left 4 Dead. Boomer. The Boomer. Left 4 Dead is probably one of the greatest projects I've ever worked on. Mm-hmm. So the Boomer character is about 300 pounds, you know, and they were looking at maybe hiring a sumo wrestler mm-hmm. to put in they don't make mocap suits for sumo wrestlers. So I said, let me try to bring him to life first before we go through this extreme, and it was easy to shift the weight, slow him down,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I got to create the Boomer.
But you don't physically have to put on a fat suit, because all you have to do is, it's just the skeleton.
This is my skeleton.
Just tracing a skeleton, and they can build the size of the mm-hmm. anything off that skeleton.
But that's also the beauty of the technology, because before, when I first started, we only knew what the characters looked like from drawings. So now with real time, they can put the character, animated character up on screen. You can see what it looks like. They can drop your skeleton in him. Then you can move. I mean, if you think about like the Warcraft games, those soldiers are wearing armor with, you know, giant spikes on them. And if you raise your hand, you're stabbing yourself in the face.
Right.
So now in real time, I look at the character and I go, okay, can't raise this arm this way. I can raise it this, you know, so that's the beauty of learning how to move.
Huge.
The axe is, you know, 18 feet long, you know, so you got to be careful. You have to learn how to use the weight and things like that. So that's really interesting. But having an action figure is like been a dream. So
you made it, man.
I made it.
Congratulations.
I made it. And for voice actors, this is a trick that I use that, here's just a few titles. I was the original Red Dead Revolver. Star Wars Force Unleashed 2, worked on the final cinematic. I knew who Darth Vader was going to kill. but one of the big things that I do on getting copy of your work, it's really hard, you know, because a game takes 2 years to make. They don't remember, you know, you're not working with them up until the last second, and you're like, I want a copy of the game. And most game companies don't, you know, want to give you a copy, or they forget, or they move on to the next game, and the animators have moved on to the next project. What I like to do is I ask for a copy signed by all the animators,
all
the people that work on the game. So
that's
usually
awesome.
I get autographs from the whole team, and then I get a free copy of my game.
That's a nice trick.
So it's one way.
Nice, man. Dan, what do you say?
Yeah. I think it's time to wrap things up into a nice, tight little bow. Yeah, we're actually looking for a cell phone here, believe it or not. you know, hey, it's reality TV. What can I do tonight?
Thank you.
Oh,
hey, now
boy.
Dan gets to be the one whose nose I pick.
No, not the nose! Not the nose!
We do this strictly so we can have a goofy picture to promote the show later. But anyway. What's that? Oh, yeah, dude, try it. Let me see. Do that shot again, Andrew. Oh, I thought you were going to put it on Dan.
Damn.
There you go.
Okay. It doesn't quite work.
That's kind of pointless, huh?
Okay.
Thank you, man.
No, thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Hope I enlighten some people.
Well, you enlightened me, that's for sure.
You did.
Well, let's tell everybody what's going on next on VOBS. Coming up on August 29th. David H. Lawrence, the 17th, will be here. He's going to catch us up on what he's up to in the VO world and his TV acting world, his world as well. And I'm sure he's going to show off his apps, his rehearsal.pro app, you know, because...
Absolutely.
He is not your typical actor. He's an actor who writes apps. I mean, that's pretty unusual.
Along with a lot of other things, too.
That's right.
Yeah, let's see, who else would say? Then on September 12th, our good friend Christy Bowen will be joining us from Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a voice actor, a Wovo member, lives in Middle America. And you wanted to hear how one can be successful without being in L.A. or New York.
Oh,
so
cool.
That's a good thing to talk about. And she'll be here on September 12th. Then
Sylvie Villagran, who is local to L.A. area. She will be here. I'm pretty sure she'll be here live in the studio because she is local. So that's awesome. We've never had her on. I don't think we've ever been able to interview her before. So I'm really excited.
There's our chance.
Yeah.
All righty.
And then we're going to be off Rosh Hashanah. We're going to be off on Labor Day. So we're going to have a couple of nights off. But we deserve it. Thank you very much.
We work hard at this show.
We do, man.
What are some of the donors we have this week?
Oh, the donors. We get donors. We get lots of donors. Donors. Oh, that's going to get flagged on YouTube for me singing that. No. I didn't sing it that well. It's impossible. Donations. George Whittam. Well, I don't donate to the show. That must have been my dad.
Nice job.
Thanks, Dad.
Oh, okay.
Amanda Fellows. Thank you, Amanda. Brian Page. Awesome. Thank you, guys. We received sponsorship money. Thank you from Source Elements. Just going through the list. Eric Aragone never misses a show. He is a really great friend of the show. Thomas Pinto, one of our sustaining members as well, and Shelley Avellino. Thank you to all the donors for the show.
All righty. And let's see. What's happening at Edge?
Well, if you want to see what's going on at Edge, you can go over to edgestudio.com, or you can follow them on Twitter, which is probably the best way is to follow them on Twitter, which is at Edge Studio. We're building a new webpage for my tech department, so that's going to be launched pretty soon. It's going to make it a lot easier to find the things that we do and that I do for the tech side of Edge Studio, so stay tuned for that. Probably rolling out by the end of the month.
A webinar on the 7th of September with our sponsor VoiceOver Extra.
Getting dropouts.
The use of processing.
Okay.
So that's going to be a good one. That is on September 7th, and you can go to voiceoverextra.com. That's with an X, not with an EX, .com. And hopefully you're subscribed over there, and you can click on that and register for that. I'm going to talk about proper use of processing for auditions and for production, and get rid of all that mythology that all you people get out there.
Right on, man. That sounds good. Everybody needs that. It needs to be, needs to be demystified. We got show logs. So if you want to see what we've been up to, if you want to kind of skim through the show instead of listening or watching to all hour and a half, no matter what we do, the show's an hour and a half. We can't. This is the hour and a half long hour show. His fault. It happens a lot here, but if you want to skim through the show and see what we talked about, you can always check out the show logs typed up painstakingly by Jack DeGolio each week. And they're up at the top of the website there. You'll see the show logs button. We have a podcast version. A lot of you listen to the podcast because it's a long show. But if you don't, you can listen to it on Stitcher, iTunes, anywhere that you would listen to a podcast. You should be able to find us. Just type in VOBS. We're taking auditions for the opening promo. Our promo from this week's show is Tim Black. Actually, the intro, I should say, not the promo. So if you want to have your voice on the intro to the show, just do what they did, which was transcribe the script. And if you email us, we might be able to dig it up to you and send it to you. Time out the lines, read along, try to get the timing right, and then record your own track. We'll edit it in and we'll show it at the top of the show. It's a cool, fun way to practice voiceover in a real life environment and get it heard on our show.
Absolutely. And if you want to be in our studio, like I would like to be right now, only I'm not. I'm still here in Buffalo. But if you'd like to be in our studio, because we got a great studio audience tonight, some great looking people, and wave everybody. Yeah, and nappily dressed, I might add. all you have to do is write to us again at the guys at VOBS.TV. And I know we have more people coming in next week, too, so that'll be fun as well.
Very nice.
So, yes. So, let's thank our sponsors one more time. Harlan Hogan.
VoiceOver Extra.
Ed Studio.
Source Elements.
And VO2GoGo and Rehearsal.pro.
And Antland Productions. For providing an almost uninterrupted live stream and bandwidth. Dan's had a few little dropouts here tonight, but that's certainly not their fault. So thank you, guys. Thanks to Dan's family or in-laws or whatever who let him do this tonight.
It's my wife's cousin's house.
Thanks to Dan's wife's cousin's house for letting
Judy
us
and Ed,
take over. Take over. It's really nice of them. And our producer Catherine Curran, for getting Richard in here. Thank you. Anthony Gettig and Shelly Avellino, who handle our show, actually our chat room duty. Our floor producer, Andrew Bushwitz, who is doing a great job tonight. And Lee Penny for just being Lee Penny.
Yep. All righty. Well, that's going to do it for us tonight. And it has been great. It's kind of surreal being back here in Buffalo, but I'll be back next week after FAFCON, which should be a lot of fun. Any of you guys going to FAFCON?
Not me. I'm not making it this year. It was a very, very select crew of twitchy trigger fingers on the mouse people that managed to get a ticket to that.
Right. It was like getting the A seats on Southwest, you know.
Right. But,
which I actually got once, but that's kind of cool. Anyway, that's going to do it for us this week, and we'll see you all next week with a great guest. And remember, if you want to get on the show and and be in the audience or send in a question, because George and I love to answer the tech questions, it's theguys@vobs.tv. That's going to do it for us tonight. I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Whittam in the West, as usual.
And this is VoiceOver.
Body Shop.
Or VO.
BS. Latency. I'm blaming it on latency.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Thank you for watching.
Thanks for joining us once again for another episode of VoiceOver Body Shop.